Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Ham hock and black-eyed peas, hush puppies, fried okra, collard greens, these are just some of the staples of a traditional soul food diet. But just what exactly is soul food? Well, it's food with roots in West Africa, developed over generations in the American South. It has strong connections to the black cultural identity, and it's often high in fat, high in calories, and maybe contributing to modern health problems in communities of color. It's also the subject of Byron Hurt's latest documentary, something he decided to explore, inspired by his own father's lifelong love affair with a traditional soul food diet. So, camera in hand, Hurt interviewed soul food cooks, historians, scholars, doctors, members of his own family, and everyday people. And the end result is the documentary Soul Food Junkies, which premieres on Independent Lens tonight at 9 on WILL-TV. It's also the subject of Illinois Public Media's latest community cinema event, a free screening of which will be shown with a panel discussion to follow tomorrow night at 6 at the Champaign Public Library. Today on the program, we discuss soul food and its cultural and health implications with Byron Hurt, who describes himself as more than a filmmaker. On his website, Hurt calls himself an anti-sexist activist, something that comes to light in one of his other films, Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes, which explored the sometimes misogynistic, homophobic, and violent tendencies in rap and hip hop and what those properties say about its purveyors' perceptions of masculinity and manhood. Byron Hurt, welcome to Focus.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on your show. Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. And as always, we welcome you to the conversation as well at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also post comments on Facebook at Will Radio TV Online or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. Byron, I gave a rudimentary description, but let me ask you, what is soul food? How would you define it?
Well, I think you defined it pretty well. I mean, I think you defined it as many people would define soul food. Soul food has a really interesting history. There are a lot of variations to soul food. I think it varies from region to region, from family to family, from generation to generation, you know, what tend to be the staples of anyone's soul food diet or tradition. But generally, when I think about soul food, I think about my mother's collard greens. I think about my mother's macaroni and cheese, her potato salad. I think about her great cakes that she makes, her sweet potato pies. You know, I think about the growing up and, you know, waking up to the smell of bacon and salt pork and eggs and grits. I mean, that was a part of my reality growing up as a young boy. And it was also the food that my father ate. And I mimicked my father as a young boy and ate almost everything that my father ate. So soul food was a really big part of our tradition as a family, my immediate family and my larger family that lives in Milledgeville, Georgia.
As you mentioned, your father was a lifelong lover of soul food. And he even held to the diet, I understand, as he grew sicker in the final years of his life. Was there a point at which the rest of the family said, well, you know, we all love this food, but we need to eat healthier? And how did he respond if those conversations took place?
Well, I think we all took our turns, myself, my sister, and my mother, at trying to convince my father to change his diet and eat a little bit healthier. My father loved food in general. I mean, he loved to eat. He was a big man, and he loved, you know, the food that he grew up on, you know, and it was a huge part of his tradition. And I think a lot of it was emotional. I think he, you know, was deeply connected to, you know, certain soul food dishes that reminded him of being back home in Milledgeville, Georgia. You know, growing up, you know, we lived on Long Island in New York. But, you know, my father was kind of hard to change. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, sure.
You know, and food was a very sensitive topic, you know, and whenever we made any kind of suggestions for him to, you know, to make changes, you know, sometimes he would become defensive or, you know, he would make faces. He would show that he was displeased with us being overly concerned with what was on his plate. So, you know, that was the impetus for me to make this film. You know, it was the reason why I decided that I wanted to explore this. You know, I saw how connected my father was to soul food, and even after he became sick, which I thought would be a defining moment or, you know, I guess him sort of hitting rock bottom and making him decide to make a hard life change, you know, in terms of eating habits, of his eating habits, he didn't do that, you know. And I just thought, wow, man, this is really powerful. You know, like, my father's sick, you know, he's ill, and yet, you know, he's not giving up foods that may have contributed to his illness. You know what I mean? So I just thought that if my father was going through this, you know, there had to be millions of other people who were experiencing the same thing, and that's why I made the film.
What I find interesting, what you describe in part is what I think everybody deals with to some degree, whether it's with food or something else that maybe isn't great for them, you know, but there is some sort of emotional connection to it, reminds them of family or comfort or home or something. But it seems to me in watching your documentary that you were aiming for a deeper, different kind of connection that and maybe societal, cultural pressure that's beyond just, oh, this is comfort food that reminds me of childhood. There's something more going on here.
Well, there is something more going on. At least I believe there is more going on. I mean, for soul food is a big part of, I think, Black cultural identity. Not that it's exclusive to Black people or Black culture, but I think that Black people take a certain ownership over soul food because it has been such a huge part of our tradition and our history. And, you know, soul food has been there from the time that we were still in Africa and made the journey over to the Americas. And, people become very defensive and protective when you start to talk about making changes to soul food because, you're right, it brings up all sorts of childhood memories, family memories. I mean, I can't, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to go to a family reunion or a Christmas celebration or a Thanksgiving dinner in an African-American home without there being soul food on the table, you know? And it's that big of a part of who we are as a culture. So I understood that going in, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted to both pay homage to our culinary tradition, but also challenge, you know, some of the conventional notions around, you know, what is good soul food, so that we could just think a little bit more critically about its impact. But I will say this, you know, there are many healthy soul food dishes. You know what I mean? A lot mm-hmm. of those dishes don't necessarily get the kind of attention that they deserve. Because most people, when they think about soul food, you know, they go to a soul food restaurant, you know, they're thinking about smothered chicken, or they're thinking about the macaroni and cheese or cornbread or, you know, fried chicken.
You have me thinking about it right now, as a matter of fact.
I'm sure. And my film is going to make you think about it even more so.
That's right.
You know, because we have a lot of beautiful shots of soul food. But you know, I eat a lot of greens, you know, and kale is a big part of the soul food tradition, and mm-hmm. collard greens and black-eyed peas and, you know, chicken is as well, you know, but, you know, maybe not fried chicken, maybe baked chicken, maybe removing the skin from the chicken, you know, could be, you know, more healthy than, you know, eating, you know, fried chicken. But I try to treat this subject with the kind of sensitivity necessary, you know, to both honor my cultural tradition and also try and advance the culture at the same time.
Before we go any further in talking about this connection between soul food and Black culture, I want to play a clip from your film that maybe lays it out pretty clearly. This is just sort of like a montage of people talking about what they believe makes soul food such a big part of their culture. So let's take a look at listen to this.
Soul food tastes good, better than most white man food. That's for sure.
Soul food is a great part of our culture because it's a time of coming together. It's a time of cooking together, talking together, sitting down and consuming together.
That's why when we pray, good Lord, good meat. Come on, let's eat. Hallelujah.
That just a brief clip that gives us sort of a sense of It's, as I said, a time of coming together. So any sort of communal event, even the last line there, you know, good Lord, good meat, come on, let's eat, hallelujah, sort of says this is a connection even to, I imagine, you know, church events, and you're going to have a lot of soul food afterward, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. From church picnics to funerals, you know, my mother, you know, she cooks a lot of food for repasses, and the church always has, you know, that sort of post-funeral dinner. In which soul food is pretty much on the menu. So yeah, I mean it's definitely a tradition that connects African American people, and I think that, you know, I think there's also a sense of cultural pride in that, you know, enslaved Africans took what they had, the little that they had, and they turned it into something that people around the world really appreciate. And if you go to a restaurant like Sylvia's in New York City, the famous Sylvia's restaurant, whose owner passed away several months ago, you know, you'll see just as many, you know, people from Europe or Japan or Asia, other parts of Asia, you know, standing in line, you know, to come and visit and eat in Sylvia's, which is, you know, a very well-known soul food restaurant. And you can go to pretty much any soul food restaurant that has a good, strong reputation, and you'll see, you know, quite a bit of diversity there. And I think that this film, you know, while it's sort of centered around my family and my family's experience, I really think that this is a film that people outside of the African-American community could really appreciate and understand, because this is about food. It's about family. You know, it's about tradition. I think that this film is a family film. You know, so if you could appreciate the story of someone, you know, a son who's concerned about his dad's health, then I think that you could appreciate this documentary.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing soul food and the culture that surrounds it with documentary filmmaker Byron Hurt. His latest film, Soul Food Junkies, premieres on Independent Lens tonight at 9 on WILL-TV. Tonight's broadcast will be followed at 10 o'clock by a live Soul Food Junkies tweet chat on Twitter, hashtag Soul Food Junkies. And the film is also the subject of Illinois Public Media's free community cinema event tomorrow night, starting at 6 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library. The film will be screened, then a panel discussion will follow. We welcome your questions and comments for Byron Hurt at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email your question or comment to will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. So what are some common misconceptions about soul food, whether it be how it's prepared or its connections to history? What is it that people maybe misunderstand about it?
Well, I think some people misunderstand the healthiness of soul food, you know, and I don't know if my film does a great job of highlighting it, but as I mentioned earlier, you know, you don't necessarily have to throw soul food out. You know, you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. I mean, there are a lot of ways in which we can maintain, you know, soul food as a cultural tradition, and prepare it in a very healthy way. So I think that's one thing. I think the other thing that I tried to explore in the film was the whole idea of the notion that black people, all slaves, ate from the bottom of the barrel. And I think that while some slaves probably have very limited access to food and probably didn't have a vast amount of food or certainly did not eat as well as slave owners, but that slaves did have spaces where they could grow their own food and where they could actually share their food, you know, with people within their particular community. And, you know, people like Dr. Lenny Sorensen, you know, talk about that in my film. Jessica Harris talks about that in my film. Dr. Frederick Opie also talks about that in the film. And so I think this kind of gives, it adds a certain level of nuance and complexity to soul food that some people may not have known, you know, before, and it challenges certain myths about soul food. Like I grew up hearing stories from my grandfather where he said that his father, you know, told him stories about eating from, you know, a trough, eating out of a trough, you know, that pigs eat out of, you know. And so, you know, that was something that I sort of held on and was sort of passed around in our family. But Lenny Sorensen, you know, makes the argument that, no, some slaves actually ate pretty well, and some slave owners felt that it was in their best interest for slaves to eat well because they needed slaves to work, you know, and have energy throughout the day. I think that's a particular nuance that we address in the film.
Let's take a couple of calls. We'll start with Maria in Kansas City. Maria, welcome to the program.
Hi. First, I just want to say, Byron, that I was really touched by the movie, and you know, I do see it foremost as, you know, a very personal story of your relationship and loss of your dad and your family around food, and I want to express my empathy for your loss of your dad. And
thank you very much.
Yeah, I share that same tradition and, really feel it, feel that most acutely, and I thought it was, and I think from that perspective, it's a really beautiful human story that, as you said, anyone can identify with. And, we have lots of different traditions around the world, and this is one example. And I think, the area that I work in on food and agriculture issues is really trying to change the structure of our food and agriculture system. And you sort of identify that as the ultimate culprit in the movie, the industrialized food system. And I actually, after watching your movie, I got motivated enough to watch Food Inc. on YouTube last night.
Okay.
So that was pretty horrible. And but one of the things that really concerns me about the food movement currently, and just because I don't think that we're getting to the root cause of the problem, is our failure to pay attention to the structural issues, such as the increasing power of these five, I think you identified, or three. I might be getting it mixed up with Food Inc., but food corporations and, the change of our lifestyle to be so dependent on fast food and the poor quality of fast food, such that people are actually dying from fast food. I just wondered, I know a lot of the solutions that you brought up in the movie were like community gardening and community gardening efforts around the country. And I really question, as much as I enjoy gardening and have been a horticulturalist for more than 10 years, I really question the ability of these movements to solve the problems. And I'm also concerned that they're putting more focus on personal solutions as opposed to structural changes that we need to make. And albeit politically the structural changes, to reduce the power of these corporations is probably, extremely difficult and threatening to the status quo of our society. But I just wondered if you had any what thoughts and reflections you had on that.
All right. Thanks very much for the comments and the question there. Byron?
Well, I think it's a very thoughtful response to my film and to Food Inc. And I agree. I think that I think the solutions to these issues have to be far-reaching. And I think that we have to address these issues from multiple angles and perspectives. And I think individuals can create social change within communities, and I know that there are a lot of food justice activists who are doing everything in their power, and people within the medical field and the public health fields that are doing as much as they can in their power to both educate, people who don't have access to quality food, and also to make changes to show people where and how they can access, healthier, more nutrient-dense foods like urban gardens and that sort of thing. But I do think that there have to be some real systemic issues that have to be challenged and addressed. And I think that we're starting to see that. I mean, I think what Michelle Obama is doing with Let's Move, I think is a really great program, that has a national presence, and Michelle Obama is so well-respected and so well-liked that she has a huge audience. And of course, she has her detractors, but she also has people who are in support of her vision. And I even agree and support, you know, a lot of things that are happening, you know, on sort of like a local state level and city level, you know, where people are starting to do things like, you know, have bans on, you know, junk food in schools,
right,
which I think is important. Or, you know, Mayor Bloomberg's sort of decision to cut down or cut back on, you know, people's ability to buy sodas, you know, at like, you know, really huge, in huge volumes. I think these things are very helpful. And I think that I also know that, you know, structural change is slow to change. You know what I mean? And I think that it changes incrementally. And, you know, I think that if we can approach it from a multifaceted perspective, I think that we can create some difference. But I think overall, you know, it takes a lot of awareness and education. And, you know, at the end of the day, these huge corporations, these huge food, you know, corporations, whether they're fast food corporations or corporations like Monsanto or whoever, they have billions of dollars at their fingertips, you know, that they can use to market and to promote and to sell their products. And so I think from my perspective, the best thing I can do as a filmmaker is to use my tool and my skill and my craft as a filmmaker to create films that are going to make people think and talk and perhaps change and be motivated by. That's what I try and focus my efforts.
Well, let's get back to the film, and specifically since you mentioned fast food, I know there's one point in the film where you're sort of suggesting that you were almost reaching out for a reason why your father passed away, and that you kind of almost wanted to, in a way, blame soul food, maybe solely. But you sort of came to realize, well, no, he ate fast food too. And there were other, of course, other factors. There always are other factors when it comes to somebody's health. Can we say unequivocally that soul food, particularly that sort of high-fat, high-calorie traditional soul food diet, does contribute to certain health problems that are faced by the black community?
I think that soul food can be highlighted because, you know, I think that there are certain foods based on their preparation that are high in fat and high in calories and high in salt and sugar. And I think that for any diet, whether it's a soul food diet or any other, you know, cuisine, you know, Italian, you know, cuisine or French cuisine or whatever, I think, you know, it leads to, you know, long-term health consequences and problems. But I don't think that soul food is the sole perpetrator, you know,
right,
if you will. And I think that, you know, especially, you know, the fact that, you know, people have such easy access to very cheap and inexpensive fast food and processed food, I think that a lot of time and attention needs to be focused there. You know, for me and this film, soul food was like a jumping off point, you know, and I say to my film, like, soul food in many ways was kind of like an easy target, you know, because soul food has kind of been scapegoated on some level, you know, as being the scourge of the black diet. But
mm-hmm.
It's not the only scourge. I mean, there are many, many sources to the problem. So, I mean, I wanted to critique soul food, but I also wanted to be fair to soul food at the same time, because, you know, many people have suggested, you know, even during the course of me making the film, that if they had to make a choice between eating home-cooked soul food and eating processed, you know, fast food, you know, they would choose home-cooked, you know, soul food every time. And I would tend to agree with them on that.
And I want to get back to what maybe are some of those other scourges, the societal factors that maybe come into play in just a little bit. But first, a reminder, this is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're talking with Byron Hurt about soul food and the culture that surrounds it. It's the subject of his latest film, Soul Food Junkies. The documentary premieres on Independent Lens tonight at 9 on WILL-TV. Tonight's broadcast will be followed by a live Soul Food Junkies tweet chat on Twitter, hashtag Soul Food Junkies. It's also the subject of Illinois Public Media's Free Community Cinema event tomorrow night starting at 6 at the Champaign Public Library. The film will be screened, then a panel discussion will follow. We welcome any questions or comments you may have for Byron Hurt at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome questions and comments on WILL's Facebook and Twitter pages. We're on Facebook at Will Radio TV Online. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. The phone numbers, again, are 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We'll go next to Paul in Champaign County. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Going to go harvest some collards real soon. They're still edible out in the frozen wastes here, but they really are pound for pound better, almost as good as broccoli. I think maybe some people say they're better than. So it isn't categoric. But I wanted you were talking about how some of the slaves ate better, but the privation that made people resourceful in eating things that and finding ways to survive isn't just slavery days. I mean, in the 30s, beriberi and pellagra were widespread through the South, and it wasn't just African Americans either. There were a lot of poor whites that were really suffering awfully. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to point that out. And even in as late as the era of the Other Americas, when in the 60s there was widespread nutritional deficiency. A lot of this is not remarked upon, and I assume you mentioned it somewhat, but I just think it needs to be emphasized. And now we're getting this report about how lead in gasoline and the culture just generally is what probably spiked the to some extent is correlate in the violence in America. That's a digression, but thanks a lot. I'll just
All right. Thanks for the call.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. So that does get to sort of the broader question, which is, as you point out, it's not strictly soul food is, you know, as the scourge of, a given community's health or anything like that. It's one of several factors. And among those factors has to do with just this idea of sort of social pressure. And you really get into that a lot in this film. But I want to mention at the top of the show, I referenced another film of yours, Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes, which took a critical look at the rap and hip hop industry and the messages it sends about masculinity, specifically focusing on its violent, misogynistic and even homophobic messages. And the reason I mention it, beyond the fact that it's a fine film, is that it also grapples with a certain sense of this is how you behave in order to be a man in this community. And there is, it seemed to me, a bit of a parallel in that when it comes to soul food, there's a certain amount of societal pressure to this is the food you eat in order to be a part of this community. Is that too fine a point?
No, I think it's spot on, and I have felt that social pressure during Thanksgiving, this past recent Thanksgiving. I mean, you know, and I'm a grown man, and I'm pretty strong in my my dietary convictions. but you know, it can be very difficult to turn down food, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, how you're raised, the culture in which you were raised. And you know, and what people's sort of cultural attitudes are about race, and as I said earlier, I think, you know, soul food is like a cultural identifier. So it's like it's not simply just feeling like a certain social pressure, you know, in terms of being offensive if you turn down someone's food, but it's also a question of identity. You know, like
give us the example. What happened at Thanksgiving?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to throw any family members under the bus, but
sure.
I don't really eat a lot of, you know, things that I used to eat, you know, and so, you know, I eat mostly vegetables, you know, and so, you know, it was kind of hard to find, you know, healthy vegetables, you know, that weren't overcooked that I could eat, you know what I mean? And I don't think that, you know, there's no, like, ill intention there or, you know, I just think that people, you know, prepare food the way that they know how to prepare food, you know. But for me, you know, I was very limited in terms of what I could eat, you know. And so, you know, I had to make a decision about whether I was going to say anything or whether I was going to accept it and just kind of go along with it, because I understood that this is a part of, you know, like a cultural celebration, you know. So, you know, it's like I still kind of go through that and I still experience it myself. And, you know, what I've decided to do is that I need to have my own Thanksgiving dinner at my own home so I can have the kind of food that I want to prepare and maybe expose people and give people some options that they can have that may be healthier, you know. But, you know, like in some circles, you know, you're not really considered to be black, really a real black person if you don't eat, you know, certain soul food dishes, you know, like chitlins or you know, collard greens with pork or, you know, ham hocks or turkey necks or, you know, certain soul food dishes. I think some people would suggest that. I'm not saying that all people suggest that, but I'm just saying, you know, like it is a question of identity, you know. And so, and also, there's also a certain level of like, you know, food is also gender too, on some level, you know, because it's like, if you're a man and you don't eat meat, in some circles, that's not really a very manly thing to do.
Well,
you know, to eat salads.
You came across that during the documentary. There's one scene at a tailgate where you sort of come across this,
just such an example, right?
Take us through that.
Well, I went to Jackson, Mississippi, because, you know, I wanted to talk about, you know, the level of obesity in Mississippi, and I also wanted to visit some soul food restaurants. But I also went to a tailgate party at a historically black football game, and, you know, there were just lots of people there, and, you know, soul food was really pretty much, you know, the what was on the menu at almost every single tailgate party, you know, that we stopped at. And you know, I met a few gentlemen that had something that they called a junk pot that they put together that had a combination of, well, I would say almost every aspect of the pig inside of the junk pot. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So you're saying it wasn't a kosher pot then?
It was not a kosher pot.
All right.
And it was quite a dilemma to me because, you know, the way that my father raised me was to accept food, you know, when it was offered to you, especially in the South. But the problem is I don't eat pork anymore, and I don't really eat a whole lot of meat or anything outside of, you know, vegetables and, you know, beans and, you know, occasionally fish. So it was a really interesting scene, and I don't want to ruin it for people who watch the film tonight.
Right.
But I think it's one of the funnier moments in the film.
Yeah, they really are kind of trying to push some food on you. You could just,
yes.
Yeah, we've all had those moments with one sort of food or another. Another potential factor in all of this is just access to healthy food, or maybe put another way, access to nothing but unhealthy food. And you talk a little bit in the film about what you characterize as food deserts. What are food deserts?
Well, food deserts are areas in particular regions or sections of the country or a city where people have very little to no access to healthy food. And I think the caller is right that this is not exclusive to any particular race. I think that class has a really big part or role to play in the location of food deserts or places that don't have access to healthy foods. And so for me, as an African-American, you know, whenever I travel around the country, and I travel a lot, you know, I always notice that in the African-American communities that tend to be lower on the economic, socioeconomic sort of totem pole, you know, you have less access to quality and healthy food. And so a lot of people end up shopping in corner stores, local sort of grocery stores that don't have many healthy options, and if they do, you know, the health, what is considered to be healthy is not very fresh. And so it's an issue that I wanted to address in the film, and it's a source of frustration for people who do, you know, live in communities and want to eat healthy and provide healthy food for their children, but just don't have a whole lot of access to it. So the question of access is very important, and I think that also plays a big role in the overall health and wellness of the African-American community.
What is the answer to that question?
Well, I think that we have to have interventions, you know, that make it a priority to provide healthy grocery stores in communities of color. I think that's one option. I think people have to really complain about it. You know, I think people have to use their voice and ask for more and demand more. And I think that Sonia Sanchez in my film speaks to that very poignantly and beautifully. You know, she talks about going to a supermarket in her neighborhood, and she speaks of, you know, vegetables that look like they're about to have a nervous breakdown, you know, and how she complains about it, you know, and she brings attention to it. And I think that we have to begin to bring attention to it. You know, there are organizations around the country like the Lincoln Park Cultural District, you know, in Newark, New Jersey, that has created an urban farm and that provides healthy food for a very small amount of money, $15 or $20, you know, per week. You can get a bag of fresh groceries right in Newark, New Jersey. So I think those are some solutions, and I'm probably not, you know, you know, the expert on the issue, but those are just some things off the top of my head that I can think of that address it, and I think a very empowered way.
We're talking with documentary filmmaker Byron Hurd about his latest film, Soul Food Junkies. It premieres on Independent Lens tonight at 9 on WILL-TV. Tonight's broadcast will be followed by a live Soul Food Junkies tweet chat. All you have to do is go to Twitter and search under the hashtag Soul Food Junkies to participate in that. And it's also the subject of Illinois Public Media's free community cinema event tomorrow night, starting at 6 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library. The film will be screened, then a panel discussion will follow. We still have some time for your questions or comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, and we will have more after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, Gene Robinson reflects on his time as the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church. He's just retired. For years, Robinson received death threats. One suspect was arrested with photos of Robinson.
He had scrawled across them, "Save the church, kill the bishop," and he had a sawed-off shotgun and tons of ammunition.
Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
WILL programs are made possible in part by Eastern Rug Gallery, offering over 1,000 area rugs, hand-knotted, hand-tufted, and power-loomed. Eastern Rug Gallery also offers a professional cleaning and repair service for Oriental and other fine rugs. Located at 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. We're taking your questions and comments for filmmaker Byron Hurd. You may have seen one of his documentaries on public television in 2007. PBS featured his film Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes. His latest film, Soul Food Junkies, premieres on Independent Lens tonight at 9 on WILL-TV. It explores soul food and the culture and history that surrounds it and its implications for the health of African Americans. After tonight's broadcast at 10 Central Time, there will be a live Soul Food Junkies tweet chat on Twitter. Just search for it under the hashtag Soul Food Junkies. And the film is also the subject of Illinois Public Media's free community cinema event tomorrow night, starting at 6 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library. The film will be screened and then a panel discussion will follow. To join our conversation on air right now, you can call us at 333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Byron, we were earlier talking about this idea, this argument within the film that some men feel the need to eat certain foods to be masculine. That's part of the societal pressure inherent with soul food. But is it also true that it's considered womanly to make soul food the traditional way, meaning high fat, high calorie, lots of fried foods, that sort of thing?
That's a really good question. I haven't really thought about that too much, but off the top of my head, I would say that, I think you probably have to talk to African-American women who actually cook soul food and prepare soul food to get that answer. But I do think that that African-American women, some African-American women, derive a certain amount of pleasure by, sort of preparing soul food. Like my mother, for example, you know, she loves to cook. And she loves to cook for our family. And I think that she takes a great deal of pride in cooking traditional soul food, for people, even though she's made a lot of changes. But I think in general, I think that, you know, soul food has given, black women a certain level of power and voice within their families. I interviewed a woman named Peaches, Miss Peaches, down in Jackson, Mississippi. And she actually acknowledged that soul food gave her power. And I think that, you know, her identity is very much attached to her ability to cook, soul food, and her ability to take care of her family and to take care of her community, sort of using our culinary tradition, you know, as a way to do that. So I think it's probably best to speak with African-American women for like a real, you know, honest and thoughtful answer on that one. But I would say that I think that my guess would be that, there may be some pressure for women to, I guess, conform to the traditional ways of cooking.
Let's take another call. We have Jeff on the line. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I am a truck driver. I go to drive 48 states. I've been to every city countless times in the United States. I've been in bad neighborhoods. There's actually neighborhoods that I'm not allowed to sleep over in because the crime is so high. And the problem is, I don't think the filmmaker there, I have firsthand experience, and there is so many Walmarts in the United States. I go to some states and there's one every other mile. So there is Walmarts, which is the biggest grocer in the United States. And I understand on the poor neighborhoods, but if you have gang, drugs in these neighborhoods, which I've been in, you're not going to get a Walmart right next to them, okay? They're going to be down the road a little bit. But if you make a little effort, you can get fresh fruits and vegetables. But how do you expect these people to put these stores in areas that the problem is you got to clean up the neighborhoods. You got to get the gangbangers out. You got to get the drug addicted people out and get them some help. And then they will have stores to go by. And I'm not, you know, giving a opinion. I mean, I've been to these neighborhoods.
All right. Thanks.
I've been to New York. I've been to Cincinnati. I've been to Chicago, Illinois, over and over and over again. And there's a serious problem about addressing the issue of some of these cities with drugs, alcohol, and gangbangers. And none of these people, your guest included, will, and I don't know them, but that's where the problem is.
All right. Well, I think we,
that problem,
Jeff.
Yeah. That's what we're going to do.
All right, Jeff. I appreciate the comments very much, and we're going to talk a little bit about them. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I wanted to give Byron a chance to respond. And Byron, there may be a certain element of a catch-22 that you need a community to be healthy in all the ways that you might define that health. I imagine crime could be included in that. But in order to do that, you need to bring businesses into that community that support that health, but if the community isn't healthy, you know what I mean? There's a little bit of a cyclical thing that can happen there.
Well, I'm slightly offended by the caller's comments, although I understand, you know, that that's his experience and that's where, you know, he's coming from and that's his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that there are lots of communities of color that are not as violent or criminal,
right,
as people believe or want to believe, and that there are really good people who are hardworking people, who are educated people, and the community is very diverse in terms of the socioeconomic, you know, culture within that community, and they still don't have, you know, supermarkets that they can go to that provide healthy food. So, you know, I think that that's kind of, you know, his comments sort of reduce the black community or inner city communities as you know, violent and deviant and criminal, you know. And I understand where he's coming from, but I don't, knowing my community on a much more intimate level, I would have to disagree with his point. And I also know that, you know, where they have put in healthy supermarkets in those communities, those supermarkets have thrived. I know that there's a new supermarket in Newark, New Jersey, that has been opened recently, and you know, I just think that it's I think that that idea is part of the problem. You know, that if we create a supermarket, a healthy supermarket, in this area, that it's going to be too dangerous, or people are not going to come, and they're not going to support it. And I just don't really buy into that.
All right. Well, let's move on to Charles in Champaign. Charles, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hello, sir. How you doing? Hey, I was calling to really tell Byron that I appreciate what he's trying to put out here and what he's trying to do. And to touch on another thing, is what he addressed in regarding to the statement made by the previous caller.
Mm-hmm.
That is not true. You know, not all African Americans live in cities where it's violent. You know, we have a wide, diverse group of people. We're educated. We do different things. Mm-hmm. But I have traveled, too, around the world myself, being in the military, former Marine, and travel. I've seen that food can be denied to anyone, depending on your poverty level, depending on where you're at. So it's just as important to recognize that, too. Do we have crime in cities? Yes, we do. Do we have drug problems? Yes, we do. But that is not systemic just of the African-American community. You have it in Latino communities. You have it in communities around the world. And it's a common thing when you see that people who have and have the haves and the have-nots, you see that. Food, if it's not accessible to you, good quality food, it affects every aspect of your life, from education to your health. If children can't get proper food, they can't go to school and concentrate. So we have to look at it on a broader level. And soul food, yes, it has good qualities. I understand the culture brings us together, but in the same time, too, it is something that we do need to look at. That's just one aspect of African-American culture and American culture as a whole, because if you look at the country itself, it's very obese. So we have to look at those things, too. So I just want to look on a broader level, but I do respect what you're doing, sir, and continue the good work.
All right, thanks for the call, Byron.
Thank you very much. And I think the caller's comments were very smart and very sophisticated, and I appreciate his comments.
Something else that hip hop, Beyond Beats and Rhymes, and Soul Food Junkies had in common, or at least demonstrate, is that you are a fan of the subject matter in each. You enjoy soul food, and you enjoy rap and hip-hop. Do you ever worry that some of your fellow fans of those subjects will say, oh, well, here comes Byron Hurt, and he's going to ruin something else I love by showing me all the things that are wrong about it, as well as the things that are right? Is that ever on your mind?
Yes, it is. You know, and it was definitely on my mind with Hip-Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes. It was also on my mind a lot with Soul Food Junkies. In fact, you know, I have people, you know, respond to me, you know, sort of defensively, you know, when I first announced that I was making this film about soul food. So it definitely crosses my mind. But I think what it does for me is that, you know, it really makes me focused, you know, and determined to be as fair and you know, loving to the subject matter that I'm addressing. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I'm not out to pathologize, you know, my community. I'm out to advance, you know, my culture, you know what I'm saying, or help advance my culture. You know, I don't mean to sound too self-indulged in that way, but, you know, my goal is to promote critical thinking and to, you know, get people to become more self-aware. You know, and that's like the real goal and the real aim of my work. You know, so I mean I agree with you. Now, when I first started working on Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes, you know, I really thought that, you know, I might be, you know, attacked, you know,
yeah.
I mean, on so many levels, like physically attacked, you know, because I was making that, you know, a film that criticized hip hop. You know, I thought that you know, rappers would put my name in their songs and speak very disparagingly about me, the way they did about, you know, C. Dolores Tucker and, you know, Calvin Butts and, you know, Al Gore and, you know, other people who said, you know, things about hip hop. So, but you know what? I think at the end of the day, I think people, you know, when they watch my films, I think that they always see and identify that my critique is always coming from a place of love, you know, and they are.
We have just a few moments left. I want to see if we can maybe get one more call in. Amy's in Urbana. Hi, Amy.
Hi. First, as a fellow listener of WILO, I really want to apologize for that caller a couple of people ago. I think his comments were very insensitive, and as a listener, I don't think he represents what you deserve to hear from us. So I wanted to apologize for him. But second, I think it's a fascinating project. And following up on your last comment, I was hoping you would talk a little bit about how it actually has been received by your audiences. And I'll take it offline. Thanks so much for your work.
All right, thanks for the call.
Well, with Soul Food Junkies, the film is just being absolutely, you know, well received, you know, by just about everyone who sees it. And, you know, the film is getting great reviews, and it's getting a lot of media attention, a lot of media coverage, and, And I want to thank you for including me in on your show today. You know, the biggest thing that I see happening, you know, when I show the film publicly at screenings, that it's creating a lot of conversation, and people are, you know, sharing. They're talking about their personal experiences. They identify with my father's story. They identify with this being a family story, you know, and they identify with, you know, they see themselves in the film, you know, and it gets people to talk, and they talk about their frustrations. They talk about their successes and changing their diet. They talk about, you know, how difficult it is to address a family member that needs to be addressed. You know, so, I mean, it's really creating a conversation, and I think that's the power of this film, and that's what I intended. That's what I wanted to happen.
Byron Hurd is a documentary filmmaker. His latest film is Soul Food Junkies. It premieres on Independent Lens tonight at 9 on WILL-TV. A tweet chat will follow on Twitter at 10 Central. Just search under the hashtag Soul Food Junkies, all one word. And the film is also the subject of Illinois Public Media's Free Community Cinema event tomorrow night, starting at 6 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library. The film will be screened, then a panel discussion will follow. Byron Hurd, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And again, I appreciate the support, and I hope that your listeners tune in tonight. And again, it's a real pleasure to be on your show.
All right. Take care. We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website. That's will.illinois.edu/focus. Today's program was produced by Lindsay Moon. Kyle Mabry is our technical director. He handled your calls today. Other members of our Focus team are Pam Dempsey, Kimberly Cronick, and Jim Meadows. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us.